I'll go first on it.
Okay.
Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we crack open the mailbags
and discover how John Denver teaches geography to cab drivers.
And other tales from the glad, sad, and high.
It's Friday.
It's Friday.
Friday.
We made it.
Yeah, we made it.
Friday is the best day.
Mm-hmm. We're going to let Ryan go home after this and take a shower. Been here all week.
He needs it.
It's been a long week.
Yeah. Friday is the best day because of this. I don't know why that's different from other days, but it just feels different.
Nice crack.
And also because we answer fan mail.
Fan mail Friday.
Yep. It is something of a national holiday.
It's kind of like that. Friday, yeah. Right? Somebody brings in a big bag down to your basement and dumps it on the pool table, and you just go through it.
All right, so before we do our fan mail Friday, sorry, I was turning off something and I didn't even hear what you said.
No
what
problem.
Did you say? Repeat.
I didn't say anything. I said somebody brings a big bag of mail down and dumps it on your pool table.
Yes, and then you go through it.
Huh? Painstakingly with a letter opener.
Yes, takes you a long time.
Yeah.
Just my family gets really annoyed. Yeah. What is this guy doing in our basement? And then you pick out the best ones.
Yep.
Right?
That's what I do.
And then we read them.
Mm-hmm.
Or play calls. We also have calls.
Yeah.
We have a lot of calls now. The jingle is working.
Yeah, it really is working. Yes. It's fantastic.
So that's good.
Lots of people are glad or sad.
Or high.
Thank you.
Okay, so anyway, what you came for is this. It's called Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us all this week has been
Ryan Scholin.
So it's been thank fantastic. You, Ryan, for
really has been great.
Thank you. This is fun.
Joining us. And you have no knowledge of what any of this correspondence is, so you can just chime in and it's all
who are these people?
Right?
I don't know.
Okay.
The listeners.
The people.
But before we do that, we occasionally have to correct misstatements that we made in the past. We like to do that.
I'm surprised we don't have to do it more often.
Yeah, I know.
To be honest with you. I'm surprised we don't have to do it every day.
It is kind of funny. Well, we have a new fact checker.
Yeah.
Not that we hired him to do this. He's just volunteered his services for us.
And his name is
Craig Rosen.
God bless him.
Who is a music journalist in LA and a fan of the show. He listens to the show. Mm-hmm. But then when we say something that's not exactly right, he tweets at us and says, you know, you got that wrong.
God bless him.
And actually, I like that.
Me too.
I like to be corrected on things. I want to get it right. So a couple little things that Craig pointed out recently. One was that we said on the show about Bonnaroo that U2 played at Bonnaroo and it was their first U.S. festival appearance ever,
I think is what we said.
Mm-hmm. We saw that many places across the internet.
That's right.
Many outlets had reported that they had never played a festival in America before.
That is absolutely correct. That they reported that.
And we said it.
And we said it.
But
what the funny thing is, on that same episode, we were sort of joking about this thing called the US Festival, which took place in the early 80s out of in Southern California.
Remember this, Ryan?
No.
I think Wozniak underwrote the whole thing, right?
Steve Wozniak. Yeah. It was his festival, and he got a bunch of bands together, and it had, I don't know if it was like, I think it was like 3 days, and each day had a different theme.
It was so like Coachella 20 years ahead of its time.
I know Van Halen played.
Yes.
That was one of them.
And I do believe Motley Crue was there as well.
Right. So it was funny because we sort of were joking about the US Festival being this sort of disaster of a festival that happened. It lost a lot of money. And it turns out, according to Craig, and then we verify this, that U2 played at the US Festival back then. So,
and certainly they were not nearly of the profile they are now when they played then, right? They were a fairly new band at that time.
That was pre-Joshua Tree.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. By a
maybe,
few years.
Maybe War had just come
just,
out.
I think it was right around that time.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. So the distinction here is that until Bonnaroo, this year, U2 had never headlined a festival in the United States for whatever that's worth. I mean, there's tons and tons of bands at festivals. You know, there's only a few headliners. So,
yeah, that's right.
But anyway, but they hadn't played one at least since then. So 35-ish years, something like that. Okay.
That.
So anyway, there you go. Now, the other thing Craig said was he kind of disputed a little bit when we characterized Funboy 3 as having covered Our Lips Are Sealed.
Mm-hmm.
And the distinction here is that it is true that Funboy 3 recorded Our Lips Are Sealed after the Go-Go's made it a big hit.
Yes.
Only maybe about a year later.
Yeah. And they released that.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And it's great. Mm-hmm. I said it's a great cover of that song. Well, it turns out, it depends on how you look at it.
Yeah.
He said, not really a cover because the song was co-written by Jane Wiedlin from the Go-Go's and Terry Hall
from Fun Boy 3 and the Specials. Yeah.
So what do you think? Is that a cover then if it's a guy who's in the band had a hand in writing it?
It's a little bit of a mix. I mean, was Aretha Franklin covering Respect?
Yes.
Yes.
Good point.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, like somebody writes a song, you play it, somebody else plays it. It's two people playing a song.
Yeah.
And my contention, too, is that the Go-Go's had the big hit with it, right? And so that sort of established the song as a Go-Go song. So that, I think in my mind, Fun Boy 3 is covering
The
famous
song. I think if Terry Hall was the sole songwriter,
right, that might have been a difference.
Then you could say, okay, it's not really a cover.
Mm-hmm.
It's more the songwriter sort of reclaiming the song, which has happened in the past. You know, Springsteen has done that with some of his songs. He's given away to other people. Yeah. And then later he does a version of, you know, Because the Night, whatever. I don't know that I call it a cover. But in this case, Jane Wiedlin was also one of the co-writers. So I think it's a cover. Yeah. I'm gonna stick with that.
Okay.
Okay. And then the last thing was one thing that I discovered that I had said wrong when we were talking about Queen of Hearts by Juice Newton.
Yes.
I think I said something like it was a song from the 70s. It actually came out in 1981.
Yeah.
So there you go. I just wanted to make sure we set the record straight on that. Okay. Now let's get into the fan mail.
Okay.
Right?
Let's crack open the bags of fan mail.
You're going to love this one.
Okay.
You are going to love this
one. I'm ready to be.
So last week, when we were out recording on the deck, what is it that you brought for us as a big surprise?
Oh, well, I don't know if you're aware of this, Ryan, and maybe this passed you by. Maybe it didn't.
And sorry, we don't have any for you.
Yeah. Zima is back.
Oh, I heard you talk about Zima.
Zima is back. I was particularly excited about this for some reason. I don't know.
So no thank you.
That's actually the best reaction we've had to the Zima craze the whole time.
Well, we got a tweet here from Joe Stadler.
Okay.
I don't know where Joe is, but he tweets at us and says, "Here's my friend drinking a Zima with edible glitter last night." And then he says, "Notice the strip mall across the street. Yep, we're in the burbs."
Nice.
And there's the photo right there. His friend holding up the glass.
That's an incredible photo.
Zima with edible glitter.
Ryan, can you help us on edible glitter at all?
Y'all do you.
That's a great picture. Maybe the glitter makes it taste better.
I don't think it could make it taste worse.
Probably. That's true. Adds body.
Maybe that's what it is. Yeah.
Okay. And then we got an email here from Mike Wagner in Houston. He says this is a show idea, but we're just going to address it right now. He asks, would a song that was a hit in the 60s, 70s, or 80s, if released today, would it be a hit? He says, I had a long barroom discussion about this. I said, yes, it would be a hit. I think great songs are great songs. Imagine if Killer Queen was released today. We would freak out. We haven't heard anything like that in a long time since, well, Killer Queen. My friend, who was wrong, of course, said no. What if God Only Knows was released today? What if Maybe I'm Amazed was released today? The first McCartney album is the blueprint of like a million albums in the last 10 years. Would love to hear what people think about that. So I guess the question is a song timeless or is it of its time, right?
Yeah.
And would a song that was a hit then come out today? Would it still be a hit?
Well, I don't know. And Ryan is a big soccer fan and probably has been a soccer fan a lot longer than me. But I don't know. And maybe I'm way off here. But let me ask you this, Ryan. Is this anything like would Real Madrid of 1958 beat Barcelona of 2009? Well, I don't know.
I mean, different styles. Like, is the biggest disco hit from 1979 going to feel relevant on the radio now? I mean, maybe it would have in 1994, you know?
Yeah,
like,
that's
on the right retro cycle, you might hit something and it might sound great.
Point.
I mean, if you hit the right, 80s kind of synthwave vibe right now, It might sound like some really cool modern hip thing you want to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I don't know. I'm a big Beatles fan. I've seen Paul McCartney play. I don't know how many Wing songs I would put out there in 2017.
Yeah, that's a good point too. And I think You know, I think the retro or the, sort of the cycle notion is very important in this, because I think as musicians, obviously you're absorbing influences and you're swallowing them and they come out in your own music in a certain way. But I do think there is a point where just for whatever reason, there's a break in that knowledge or a gap in that knowledge, right? And maybe you go back the last 15 years and you're absorbing those records, or maybe you're only, you know, 18 years old when you start your band. So your knowledge is kind of limited to a certain thing. So maybe you miss something, right? And so I think a lot of it has to do with what influences are currently being digested in. And I think as Ryan is hitting on, spit back out. But then, you know, you get these wonderful kind of retro cycles where something will come back and be, well, that's just like Juice Newton, 1981.
That's,
you
know, right.
Like,
that's right.
That's where the break is, right? Yeah. It's, and so you can kind of find that fault line.
Yeah. So I, two things I thought of here is I actually think hits are more, probably more of their time than they are timeless. I think they capture something in that culture,
yeah,
that makes them hits. I'll give you an example. I think of Jimi Hendrix.
Yep.
Right. I don't know that, like, if Hendrix were young today in this era where guitar rock just is not a thing mm-hmm. much anymore, that he'd have hit songs.
This is a good
Do you
point.
Know what I'm saying?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So there's that. The other thing too, is I think this notion of hit, you know, there's been a lot of great songs that were not hits, you know, commercial hits,
yeah,
right?
Right.
But maybe have become recognized as great songs over time,
yeah,
or great albums like Velvet Underground,
sure,
you know, things like that. So some things sort of stand the test of time, even if they weren't popular then. Other things were popular, stand the test of time. Other things were popular and have, you know, are no longer considered,
yeah,
great songs, right? So I one of the issues with a hit is that there's so much that goes into the making of a hit record beyond just the song itself. So when you say a great song is a great song, that may be true, but that doesn't mean it's going to be a hit,
yeah,
at any given time. It has mm-hmm. to be, you know, there's, you know, the promotion end of it and the airplay. And again, sort of like capturing something that connects with people then.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then also a lot of times things become popular because they're popular. Mm-hmm. So when it's a sort of snowball effect, right? There are a lot of, you know, pop hits that just because they started to catch on just became more and more,
yeah,
popular, even if they aren't necessarily great songs. Right.
Right. Right.
But
I think that makes sense.
Right.
Jim, we got an email here from George Singleton,
yes,
our friend in
Hong Kong.
He's from Hong Kong. It's kind of incredible.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. He writes, "Hi, Jim and Patrick. Well, it took a while, but I finally caught up. Yes, every single episode listened to and several saved. It was a really fun journey, and I not only enjoyed it, but I learned quite a few things along the way. Thanks. Happy to help, George, and thank you for catching up, man." Now, a quick story relating to the Toots Country Roads cover episode.
Toots and the Maytals.
That's right.
Toots and the Maytals.
When we talk about cover songs, this was one of your picks.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Okay.
While I've lived in Asia for 20-some years, I'm originally from West Virginia. Whenever I've gone in the region, Jakarta, Singapore, Beijing, etc., the taxi drivers ask, "So where are you from?" I'd say, "From the U.S., from West Virginia." And the driver would always say something like, "Oh, Richmond," or "Big Plantations," or even "Gone with the Wind." So in response to the question, I began to sing a song that all of them knew, as it was on every karaoke and late night oldies station in the region. I'd start singing "Take Me Home Country Roads" to "The Place I Belong," and they'd be singing right along with me. Then I'd stop singing right before the payoff line, and they'd finish the sentence by themselves, "West Virginia." I'd immediately say, "That's where I'm from." Case closed. Man, music as communication. That's fantastic. What a great story. Thank you, George.
That
isn't that great?
I love that,
yeah,
so much, right? I mean, that just shows you the power of a pop song to travel,
yeah,
the world, and people don't even necessarily have to understand it all,
no,
but they know it, right?
God bless John Denver.
Yeah. Okay, we got some calls here.
Let's do it, man.
You know, we always are pimping the suburban party,
yeah,
line, so let's, you know, let's do this now. Let's play some stuff. This is all in reference to covers. People,
okay,
really love cover songs and,
yeah,
love to comment on them. So
a couple covers weeks.
Let's start with this first call here from John Off.
"Hey, Jim and Pat. Off from, again, I didn't hear a little jingle. I was kind of waiting for that, so that kind of threw me. Thanks for playing my request for some of the Foo Fighters covers from that Medium Rare album. I did notice I have a little bone to pick with you on the on dismissing the group America. I kind of am of the thought that music sometimes picks us, and music happens at a time in our life or at a place in our life where it's meaningful to us. You know, if you put it in a vacuum and say, you know, this group make any meaningful songs that will last forever, no, I wouldn't even argue for a second. But great music and meaningful music are sometimes two totally different things. I mean, I have vivid memories of playing Sister Gold, Girl I Liked, with my one of my parents' hi-fi because the phone cord wouldn't reach into my room and I wanted her to hear this song. Or I remember picking up another girl after a homecoming game and us singing the lyrics to Tin Man. You know, both songs that are throwaways, but they happen at a time that I kind of, you know, remember those. Even, you know, my current wife, we had a running gag with the Laura Branigan song, Gloria, a terrible song on face value, but it meant something to us at the time. And, you know, we still kind of joke about it. I kind of think that music is a real visceral thing, and it evokes emotions in us all the time. You know, when you think about it, that every song played on the radio, probably to more than one people, probably several people, hundreds of people, means something to them in their life. Something happened during that time in their lives that they remember that song. You know, now, like, is it a good song? Is it a bad song? And I'll leave it for, you know, you guys to decide that, because, you know, you guys are the critics, and I respect what you do. But, you know, just because a song is not great doesn't necessarily mean it's not meaningful to somebody. And like I said, I would never be there to debate that America is a great band. But I could pick several other bands that are in that category that didn't mean anything to me, but probably meant something to somebody else. So just kind of my thoughts on that. I don't really expect this to hit the air. Just want to kind of put this down in the recording while they were kind of floating around in my mind. And just kind of wanted to see what you guys thought.
So what do you think?
I think that John's going to put me out of business as a record critic, because I don't think I can criticize any songs anymore.
Were you disparaging A Horse With No Name?
No, I don't think we were.
I don't, maybe.
Oh,
no, no. That's, well, what happened was somebody recommended the America cover of My Back Pages.
That's right. Yeah, right? And we played that.
And we played it, and it was really good. Yeah, and then we sort of expressed some surprise.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened.
America did that, yeah.
Right. And that was about as far as
yeah.
it went. But because we only really know that band America from some of the AM radio
right.
hits. We
didn't exactly. really. Yeah, I can't say I listen to a lot of them. So, but that's right. very well said.
But anyway,
I think that's right.
Yeah. But his point being that a song can be an important song to somebody, mm-hmm. even if it is an important song to, you know, critical culture, yep. right?
I'm a little insulted about what he had to say about Laura Branigan and Gloria. that was like a jukebox hit for me as a kid.
Yeah,
it's like,
man.
I'm going to put on that.
Yeah. And then, of course, see my breaking down in tears when talking about the Joshua Tree album.
I completely agree with John's point. I think we've talked about this before, the whole idea of what some people call guilty pleasures.
Yeah.
And how I'm really kind of against that term, because I think if you like a song, you should just own it. And you should like it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody completely. Else can just, you know, go to hell,
yep.
whatever. Right.
Yep.
So you don't have to sort of qualify it as a guilty pleasure.
No.
And so own that Laura Branigan song.
Yeah,
right.
That's it.
We have another call here. Mark from Seattle.
It's not Mark Arm, is it, by any chance?
Hi, this is Mark calling from Seattle, and I actually have about four suggestions. One of my favorite cover records of all time was actually the old dedicated cover or tribute record to the Grateful Dead, and there were two stand-ups, I thought, on that record. One was Elvis Costello doing a ship, and the other was Jane's Addiction doing Ripple. That was a really neat version. I was just thinking about Warren Zevon the other day, too, and he did a really interesting take on Steve Winwood's Back in the High Life Again. And the discussion of covers could be complete without thinking about Johnny Cash's Hurt cover of the Nine Inch Nails song. Love the show. I've been listening to you guys since you were made the Slicing Up Eyeballs podcast and website. So keep up the good work. Enjoy listening to you every day. Take care.
Okay, so that part where it cut out for just a minute there, he was referencing Elvis Costello doing Ship of Fools.
Yeah, Ship of Fools on the Dedicated tribute album.
So yeah, he started with Dedicated and then went off into some other things. But do you know that Dedicated
album? I do. I happen to know it. Yeah.
I have it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have the CD upstairs. It's really good. Mm-hmm. It actually, I think, showcases some of the best Grateful Dead songwriting, you know, because when you hear it interpreted by other people, then you sort of, you know, it makes you sort of appreciate again the songs themselves. Right?
Yeah. And for me, it always sort of illustrated the impact that the Grateful Dead had beyond artists that you would normally think were influenced by the Grateful Dead or at least knew about the Grateful Dead. Right. And I'm a Grateful Dead fan. And I think it's really interesting that, you know, it reached so many different people. And for example, I know that, you know, Lee Ranaldo and Sonic Youth is a huge Grateful Dead fan, right? Mm. But Thurston Moore couldn't stand the Grateful Dead. But it just goes to kind of show you that there's a, it impacts people that you wouldn't normally think would be into the Dead for a lot of different reasons. And I liked Mark's call very much. And I also liked that it kind of seemed like he didn't want anybody to hear him, that he was calling Rock in the Suburbs. He was kind of over in the corner, just like, I'm going to call you guy.
I feel like Dead covers are, they're a little dangerous, right? Yeah. Like that those songs mean so much to so many people, right? And they've heard it. But I mean, I think seeing like John Mayer play with them and seeing the band in different, you know, formations, seeing like Phil Lesh play and mm-hmm. hear Phil sing some of the songs and hear Bobby sing some of the songs, you know, they have life. And that's when you listen to covers. I feel like if they're good, you're listening to standards.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, well, Johnny Cash playing Hurt, Johnny Cash playing any of those covers, like, wow, right. He turns those into standards.
Well, and yeah, one last thing about that. Part of the reason why I like that album so much. The other thing about the Dead is that, you know, they're known for their improvisation and stretching the songs out and doing all these things. But these covers really kind of take the songs back to their essence, mm-hmm. you know. And so it gives you really a new appreciation for the songwriting itself.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. All right. Now, you guys will like this. This is a call we have from our friend Jesse Jackson.
Hello, Jesse.
Who does the Set Listing Bruce podcast.
Hello, Jim. Hello, Patrick. Jesse Jackson from Dallas, Texas. It's covers week. It's covers week. It's covers week. Or at least covers 3 days. Hey, I wanted to see if you two had listened to the 2012 Meet Glenn Campbell release. It's where he did an album of covers, including Sing, Walls, Times Like These Days, All I Want Is You, all done in kind of that mod, you know, the country and western style that came out, you know, kind of, you know, in his heyday. It's a great album filled with a lot of wonderful songs, and it makes it even more poignant when you realize that while he was doing this, he was already fighting Alzheimer's. So anyway, if you haven't checked it out, I recommend you listening at least to a couple songs. It is, I think, a really cool album with some great takes on some wonderful songs.
Okay, so the album he's referencing, it's called Meet Glenn Campbell. I think he got the year a little bit off because apparently it came out in 2008.
Okay.
But it is. It's. So we talked about the Dedicated as being a tribute album mm-hmm. where other artists interpret one artist's songs. And then the other thing is the all covers album where an artist interprets other people's songs. And that was this. It's called Meet Glenn Campbell.
Yep.
And, you know, some of the selections here, kind of like this Johnny Cash thing, they're ones that you wouldn't necessarily expect. So there's like Foo Fighters song.
Oh, interesting.
There's a Green Day song.
I had no clue.
Good Riddance is on there. Hmm. There's a U2 song, All I Want Is You.
Oh, for Rattle and Hum.
Right.
Yeah.
So a lot of these, but here's the one that I want to play.
Okay.
Because earlier, Ryan, you referenced Paul Westerberg.
Yes.
Oh.
And he covers
it was going to be Gloria.
What is he?
He covers a replacement song.
No way. Glenn Campbell?
Glenn Campbell.
On the very first day that you were born, to the very last time you waved and honked your horn, I had no chance at all to watch you grow up so sadly.
You know that song? Sadly Beautiful. It was on All Shook Down.
Yeah, I'm vaguely familiar with it. Yes. Yeah, it sounded totally different in that guy. It sounded completely different.
Yes.
Yeah, it took me a minute
until
the line that kind of sprung it for me. Yeah.
I mean, isn't that the fun of country music? I mean, you can sing just about anything, right?
Yeah.
You can sing just about anything you put in a country song, and as long as it's got some feeling in the words, you're going to hear it come through.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I had no idea that was out there.
Yeah, so... check this out on Spotify because it's actually a really fun,
really interesting covers.
Record.
Yeah.
All right. We got one more call here. There's a call, and then there's also a Facebook comment on the same
topic.
Cover song.
Oh,
the same cover song.
Beautiful.
Suggestion.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Jim and Patrick. This is Justin Steiner from Valparaiso, Indiana. I just got to the recent fan mail Friday, and there was some more talk of Bananarama's Cruel Summer. I always liked that song. This week you're doing covers again, and Superchunk does a great one of Cruel Summer, done in their inimitable power pop style. It's all kind of driving and jagged, and Worcester does a great job on the drums. It's the B-side to a fantastic Superchunk original, This Summer, so that's two summer songs for the price of one. This Summer is all about driving down to the shore with your wife in the passenger seat, and how that ritual can make you feel like you're aging backwards. It really resonates with me tonight, because my wife and I are leaving in the morning on our first road trip with just the two of us since 1997. Our son decided to stay home and work instead of going on our annual 4th of July trip to a lake up in the Adirondack Mountains in New York. It's kind of weird and kind of cool. Anyway, Max sings about having a tape full of hits in this summer, and I've got my car CDs chosen, Sirius XM on the radio dial, and of course, I'm rocking the suburbs on my iPhone. Time to rock across state lines. Anyway, you should check out those two Superchunk summer songs if you haven't done it already. Both of them are just really, really good. Superchunk is one of those bands that's been talked about a lot on the podcast, and I think maybe you should do a show or two on them coming up here sometime, maybe later on this summer. All right, you guys keep on rocking. Thanks.
That's the Superchunk original, This Summer.
Yeah, loved it.
Have you heard that before?
No, I never heard it.
No, not at all.
It was from 2012.
Okay.
A single, I guess. I hadn't heard it either. That's great. And also, you know, when we talked about summer songs, I don't know how I missed this. One little technique that makes a song a summer song, I think, is hand claps.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. You got to have some hand claps in there. Yeah.
Little hand claps, little tambourine.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
The burst of feedback didn't hurt either.
So that was really great.
That was great.
And then we got a Facebook comment from Scott Bird.
Scott Bird.
Who said, hi, guys, just finishing up covers week and am reminded of Patrick's pick recently of Cruel Summer. Check out Superchunk's cover. It's awesome and just proves the original is a great song and that there should be no hesitation embracing it. I mean, Superchunk covered it. As a side note, I once saw Mac play an acoustic version of Come On Eileen without irony.
Nice.
You could tell he loved that song as well. Well, okay, we got to play the Superchunk.
Got to hear it.
Cruel Summer. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Think.
Oh man, that was fantastic. They really ripped through it. Yeah. Just gives it a different vibe.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's fun. I kind of want to hear like the Mountain Goats version. Yeah. You know, just John and like one guitar.
That would be even better. And John, songs John Darnielle should cover. Yes. Yeah.
And John Worster would play on both.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. That's
right. Okay.
But I will say, thanks to Scott and Justin for those excellent calls. It's cool that they were kind of working in synchronicity there. But yeah, we should talk about Superchunk. It's not a band we've talked about a lot, and I really like that band.
It's one of my all-time favorite
bands.
Yeah,
I like them.
Yeah, they can do no wrong in my books. So.
You know, I had a thing with them where I really always liked to listen to them in the car. I don't know why. When I was driving around, I would love
they're
to
that
turn
kind
them
of
up
band.
On a cassette tape. Right. Yeah, they were a lot of fun to listen to. Yeah.
Because it comes through the speakers
yeah,
so well.
Yeah, really cuts through know? The traffic noise
absolutely.
And everything else.
Okay, just a couple more things to get through here. The Fan Mail Friday always runs along, but we figure you have the weekend to listen to this.
We don't want Ryan to go either, so we're trying to keep
all
around.
Weekend.
Remember this time, Patrick, when we had this episode and we featured a new character in the SPU, the Suburbs Pod Universe?
Would that be Echo Park Jimmy?
Echo Park Jimmy.
EPJ?
Yeah. People liked him, I think, right? We got a lot of comments here. Yeah. I'm just going to read these really quickly here. This was on the Facebook. From Kevin Clement, Echo Park Jimmy sounds like the type of guy I would like to have a few beers with and talk about music.
Amen.
Yep. Scott Bird, again, says, favorite fan of the podcast, Echo Park Jimmy. Echo Park Jimmy just needs his own podcast where he just talks about whatever is on his mind. I would subscribe to that in a second.
And he's got
to
record the whole thing by calling into Google Voice and just playing the Google Voice recording. Don't use a microphone, Jimmy.
You know what's great about this is I know him
you
and
do.
He works as a dog walker in Los Angeles. Mm. Dog walker to the stars, I think. And he could just like have his phone and just be talking as he's walking the dogs, right?
Well, that's an even better backstory. I'm dog walker to the stars, Echo Park Jimmy.
That's right.
Friend of Jim.
And then Mike Wagner says, just catching up and listen to this and love Echo Park Jimmy. And then there's a lot of emojis here of like hands clapping and a beer and something else. I don't even know what that
I'm
other
sure
one
what
is.
That
Can
is
you tell
either.
What that is?
Mm-mm. It should have a 100 with 200 lines and some fire.
And then lastly, this is the greatest one.
Yeah.
Twitter, Craig Rosen, who we mentioned, says, Echo Park Jimmy just figured out how to say I love you
to an answering machine.
So if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to that episode, and you'll understand what we're talking about here.
And let us sign Echo Park Jimmy to a licensing deal before you do that, because we want to get him as part of the Rock in the Suburbs universe.
That's right. So we have one more call. You guys are going to really like this call.
Okay.
Before we play it, let's just close here.
Do our business.
Yes. which is listen to Rock in the Suburbs
every day.
Oh, I thought Ryan was going to jump in and
try that again.
Steal the line. No,
every
okay.
day.
Maybe he can get the next one. You know, because here's the thing: we've been playing a lot of calls, and so we want to mention to people that if they want to leave their message, right? There's a way they can do that. You mentioned the Google Voice, right? So what they do is they call a number.
A phone number?
A phone number.
Wow.
If you're glad or sad or high, call the Suburban Party Line.
That number is 612-440-1984.
Ooh. See, I didn't want him to do that because now I'm out of a job.
Yeah. That was sultry.
It really was. A little too hot for our listeners. Sorry, Ryan. You're out now.
Anyway, listen to us on whatever podcast platform you can find. And also, you know, you can find us on social media. It's at Suburbs Pod. And you can email us rock@suburbspod.com. And you can visit the handcrafted website, which is suburbspod.com.
Ryan, where can people find you?
People can find me at ryanscholin.com, on Twitter at ryanscholin. Those are the best ways to find me. You can not leave me a voicemail. But if you do find me, then feel free to say hello. I've been happy to be here.
If you want to leave Ryan a voicemail, you can call the Suburban
call
Party
us,
line.
Sure.
Yeah, we'll forward it on mm-hmm. to him, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the number again was 612-440-1984. I thought it was going to be a competition there or something, right? All right.
Well, let me edit this episode and we'll see who wins.
Ryan, we'd love to have you back sometime.
I would love to come back. Man. This is lots of fun.
That's great.
Ryan is here in the suburbs near gym.
I'm going to roll up my sleeping bag now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pick up that trash. There's a lot of fast food bags over there.
I promised one last killer call here. You guys are really going to like this. This goes way back. This was an episode that we talked about some time ago.
Okay.
A band we talked about some time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
Hey, Jim and Patrick. Ken from Shelbyville, Kentucky. Listener from a long time from when you guys were Dad Rock, and I've recently discovered that you guys are still around under this format, so I really dig it. Was listening to the Pop Perfect songs. I had a couple that I could recommend. One of them would be a deep cut from the Cars' second album, Candio. Got a lot in my head. It shows up on a lot of my Perfect Pop song playlists. That I make from time to time, or pretty much anything from the Cars' first album would work as well. Another deep cut is Starry Eyes from the Records. Great one-hit wonder from England, side of power pop, but they made some really, really excellent power pop stuff that is underappreciated, especially in this country. Also, huge Guided by Voices fan and listened to your Bob Pollard podcast the other day. I'm from the Dayton, Ohio area originally and saw Guided by Voices a number of times. And when you mentioned that they are their kind of beery on stage, one time I saw them probably about 10 years ago or so. They were doing a reunion show in Dayton and Pollard was a little overserved. And he was doing one too many karate kicks and mic twirls, and he like fell down on the stage, and he just sang the next two songs flat on his back, and then the drummer and the guitar player looked at each other and nodded. They were like, "This is the last song. Let's get him off the stage." So they had to pretty much carry him off. So that's one of those things. Hey, and when they opened for Cheap Trick back in the day, Robin Zander said they should be called Guided by Budweiser. Talk to you later. Bye.
All right. Guided by Budweiser. Okay, so as we play out here, we could go with Guided by Voices.
Sure.
If you guys have a pick there. Or when he was mentioning the Records, Starry Eyes, you look
great song.
You hadn't heard that, right?
If I know it, I don't know it.
So why don't we do that?
Sounds good.
Let's go with it. Starry
it's
Eyes.
Such a great song.
Yep.
All right, so we'll do that. Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
Thanks again, Ryan.
Ryan Week.
Yes, Ryan Week. Okay, there you go. We'll talk to you later. Here's the Records with Starry Eyes.
all weekend, all weekend, all weekend, all weekend,
all weekend.
And you are.